know. Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Look, I haven't gotten on the call yet.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Judy.
Judy.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Brandilla.
Brandy, it's nice to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. I'm sorry about the delay.
It's okay.
Please join us in saying the Anabakoa. Anabakoa. Gedulat Yemincha Tatir Tera Al Bet Gimel Yud Tat Tzadi Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagbenu Tahareinu No, Ra. Kufre Shayan, Sintet Nun. Na Gibor, Dorshe Hutcha, Kivava, Sham Rain, Nin Gimondalit, Yudkaf Shin. Any body part, any part of your body that needs healing should be utilizing the sequence Yud Kaf Shin and transforming that body part back to the stem cell state where it will be cleansed, where it will be rejuvenated, and where it will be healed. And then you can return it back into your body where it will perform its function in a perfectly healthy state. Bahen Taharen Rakame Sikatha Gamid Gamlen Betet Resh Saritat Gimel. Chasin Kadosh Erov Tufa Nael Adata Pet Kuf Pet Tat Nimayim Yachid Ge'e Lamcha Penei Zokre Kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed, Hei Zayin Kuf. The letters of the month of Sivan, the Resh that created the planet Kohav, the planet of Mercury, and the Zion that created the constellation Ta'umim, the twins, the Gemini. Together, the Resh and the Zion spell the Hebrew word Raz, which means secret. Together, they have a gematria of 207, which is the same as the Hebrew word for light, or the Hebrew word for En Sof, the endless world, and the Hebrew word Adon Olam, master of the universe. Shabbatenu Kabel Ushmati Akatenu Yodea Talumot Shinkufav Tadiyutav. And the eighth verse we say in a whisper. We are reading from the Parasha of Korach. We're reading section 5, take a censer, verse 20. Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu aleinu ma'aseh edenu kunenei aleinu ma'aseh edenu kunenei. Vayomer Moshe El Aharon kach et lamichta v'gomer Rebichia patach chamat melech malakei mazet v'ish chacham Yekav rena dama it lehu livne nasha leis kamra mecho vecho unatra ov adaihu deha bekama zinim alma it dan u kol yoma vyoma ubadim Umatkila Salkin Umishkihin Alaihu Le Elavi Afivu Kame Vikad Ovadaihu Divne Nashala Mitzbakashuan Kame Malka Salik Rivza Vidina It ar ha-hidiki chamat melech malakei mavet li'ad bekol yoma v'yoma ba'ei barnash li'iz dahara mechogo. And Moses said to Aaron, take a censer. Rabbi Chiya opened the discussion with the verse. The wrath of a king is as messengers of death, but a wise man will pacify it. How particular people need to be to prevent themselves from giving in to their iniquities and to be careful with their activities. At various occasions, the world is judged, and on a daily basis, their deeds are entered upon the scale of justice, are monitored from above, and are recorded before him. When a person's acts are not fit for the king, anger rises and judgment is stirred. This is what is written, the wrath of a king is as messengers of death. Therefore, a person must be on watch for his iniquities each and every day. The verse seems a little bit obscure. It's not really esoteric, it's very clear. There are courts of judgment at many different times. One of them is at Rosh Hashanah every year. Others of them is for every person every night when you go to sleep, there is a court. And of course, there is the court when someone leaves the world, the final court, to evaluate what is to be done with this soul. Is it to reincarnate? Or is it to be cleansed in Gehinnom? Or is it righteous and can leave directly for the Garden of Eden? This verse in the Zohar is saying to people, use the verses in the Torah. Understand their meaning. If you do a negative action, then the anger of Hashem, which is really not, Hashem doesn't get angry. But the Shekhinah gets angry. The Shekhinah says, I'm tired, I'm having to deal with this stuff. But the essence of the effect of your negative action is you lose years. That's the meaning of messenger of death. You came into this world being given a fixed number of years. Some say it was 120 years. That's what the Torah says in a coded way. Some say in the earlier generations it was 1,000 years. As Methuselah lived 969 years, which is a small amount of years to lose from 1,000. Whatever the length of time you were given, every time you do negative actions, you lose years. And people don't understand that. They don't accept it. They don't believe it. They don't see it happen daily. But it does. And this is what the verse in the Zohar is teaching us. Wake up. Not only smell the roses, but smell the death coming at you, God forbid. Does anybody have any questions? Tonight's class is in transition. The class isn't in transition, but the handout is. The technical people are moving the web server from one server to the cloud, whatever that means technically. So I'm going to give you a address to go to. It's HTTP. /// Azure .yeshem.com / Kabbalah KABBALAH - advanced ADVANCED - reincarnation, reincarnation, -9.htm. For those of you on the recording, by the time that this is, you receive it, the transition should be complete, and you will not have to type in the word Azure, you'll just be able to go to www.yeshem.com/Kabbalah-advanced-reincarnation-9.htm. When you get this page open, please scroll down to where we left off last week. It's at chapter 4, section 4, The name of it is called double reincarnation. I hope I'm not confusing you with the double directions, but it's only for this one night, and if you want to utilize the handout tonight, this is the way to get to it. All three, the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama, can be achieved in a second Gilgul. All three can be corrected in a second Gilgul. If the Ruach and the Neshama were not present in the first Gilgul and were not consequently blemished. Concerning this, the rabbi states in chapter 4, section 3, that he wants to make two distinctions, explaining the first one as a case where most of the nefesh is not rectified in the first Gilgul. This section, however, a second case, concerns a nefesh which is mostly rectified during the first Gilgul. As we know, this is my commentary to help you relate to the translator's commentary. As we know, a nefesh must be completely rectified, must achieve its full tikkun before a ruach can come join it. So if in a reincarnation the ruach has not joined it, then in its second incarnation, the nefesh may achieve its correction because it didn't do so in the first incarnation. But as it achieves its second, now normally we would be saying it's a second incarnation. This ruach cannot come to the original nefesh. That's the rules. But the Ari is teaching us that because the ruach wasn't harmed, it didn't participate in any negative actions, it's as if the nefesh in the second Gilgul, the second incarnation, is really a first incarnation. And therefore, the ruach and ultimately also the neshama can come because they weren't harmed, they weren't blemished by any action. The first body merits to rectify the entire nefesh, but later blemishes it. There is very little tikkun left to perform, is one of the alternatives to this description. The nefesh really belongs to the first body because it's almost completely rectified in the first incarnation. This is the opposite of the previous case, where only a small part of the nefesh was rectified in that first Gilgul. In that case, the nefesh really belongs to the body of the second Gilgul. But here, only a little tikkun is left to do, and the nefesh really belongs to the first body. When this nefesh reincarnates with the ruach and neshama into the second body, they do so with the spark of another nefesh in order to help them perform mitzvot. Let me read a little bit more. As we will see, this additional spark is the main nefesh of the second body, and it will help the first nefesh complete its tikkun while in the second body. This is called a Gilgul Kaful, a double Gilgul. It is called a double Gilgul because there are two nefeshot plural of nefesh, in one Gilgul at one time. Remember this well. However, at the time of the resurrection, the nefesh and the ruach and the neshama will return to the first body. The second body will only merit the spark of the additional nefesh that came with it, since it was the main vehicle for it. The original nefesh was completely rectified in the first body and belongs to it. Thus, the nefesh of the second body will have worked for another, as is alluded to by Rab's Sheshet, who said, "Rejoice, my nefesh, rejoice, my nefesh, for you have I learned. This is a quote from the Talmud that is kind of hard to explain, but it's talking about this idea of the set of the double Gilgul. To explain it simply, and I do it more in more detail later on tonight, but to explain it simply, you have a Gilgul, you have an incarnation at the level of the Nefesh. And this Nefesh completes almost everything. The only thing it has left to do is to say the Shema Yisrael on Pesach night. Everything else has been corrected. Of course, I'm making that up just to show you the comparativeness. Because it still has something to do, it's not complete. But in comparative, everything's been done except that. So now that nefesh comes back as a reincarnation into a second body. But it also comes with another nefesh who has the job of doing, assisting and helping. Both of them have to do, say, the Shema Yisrael on Pesach night. Now, when that is accomplished, a ruach comes, and that second body goes through the lifetime of correcting the ruach. And then the neshama comes, and that second body goes through the lifetime of correcting the neshama. Now, at the raising of the dead, at the restoration of the dead, all three belong to the first body. You would think that the nefesh would go to the first body, but the ruach and the neshama would go to the second body. But because they must stay together, because they are one soul of one entity, one consciousness, they will go to the first body, all three together. But then the second body participated in a lot of actions of correction. It's entitled to receive the pleasures of the restoration, of the resurrection of the dead, of the physical world. It's entitled to receive these pleasures. What is going to happen to this? And that is the question. That is why it's called a double Gilgul, because there are two separate entities activating the second body at the time, doing that last final action, or the last few final actions for the nefesh. I hope that made it a little clearer for you.
Thank you.
Is there a question, or was you just commenting to my question?
No question.
Okay. Philip, did you have a question, or were you just commenting?
No question.
Understood. We're now at section four, chapter four, section five, the soul of a convert. When all three, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, were blemished, then they must return in separate reincarnations. And the ruach and the neshama will ensconce within the nefesh of a convert. We discussed this earlier in the classes. It's the similar description of the what I just talked about, the double gilgul, except that the nefesh didn't come close to completing it. A few aspects were corrected, but the majority is done in the second body, in the second gilgul. That's the discussion we're talking about now. And that we've been taught very clearly that the Ruach will have to come with a foreign nefesh. It's called a convert. The translator says it's a convert like people who convert to Judaism. My understanding is different. My understanding is it comes with a nefesh that is foreign to it, because the word ger means convert, but it also means stranger. And in the language of branches, the same physical word, the same word describing something in the physical world, is used to explain many different levels. I don't know that I'm right. I've had discussions with people about this, and most of my teachers say, I agree with you, meaning me. It's not the way it's normally taught. But the way it's normally taught is not from mystics. The way it's normally taught is an academic exercise. And truthfully, does it really matter to our life today what we're going to learn? Even if somebody is a convert, does it matter if, as a convert, and this is a separate discussion, you've received that additional soul again? It's been returned to you. That same soul that was injected into you at Mount Sinai. That additional soul that's been injected into you at your mikveh, when you made the conversion, there's no difference between you and another Jew that was born a Jew. So it doesn't matter whether that your nefesh becomes a stranger to some other Jewish neshama or ruach. Ultimately, the same process is being described. If a person merited his nefesh, his ruach, and his neshama, but then blemished them, the three do not return together. Rather, each one returns in a separate reincarnation. But what are the laws governing rectification of each one? When a nefesh reincarnates into a body for correction, for tikkun, and becomes rectified, then the ruach is not able to join with it, as we have already mentioned. A blemished ruach cannot join an already rectified nefesh. And certainly a blemished ruach cannot join the nefesh before it is rectified, because the ruach can enter only after the nefesh, which is on a lower level, is completely rectified. How to escape from this dilemma? How can a blemished ruach reincarnate at all? How can the ruach come into a body? It needs a nefesh, but it can't come to its nefesh based on these considerations we've described. Thus, the ruach must reincarnate alone with the nefesh of a convert or a nefesh of a stranger whose nefesh is in place of his own. And there it will become rectified in the same way. The neshama will come into another body together with a nefesh of a convert and a rectified ruach of a convert. In the Torah, the language is frequently to honor or to care for the orphan, the widow, and the stranger. And you are just being seen the language that applies to those three, or that language applies to these relationships. You have a strange nefesh to a ruach. That's called the nefesh is the orphan. The widow is when a neshama comes and has a strange ruach. And the stranger itself, the ger, the orphan is the ruach, it's the orphan. The widow is the neshama, and the convert, the ger, the stranger, is the nefesh in this description that we are talking about. Thus, the ruach must reincarnate alone with a nefesh of a convert whose nefesh is in place of his own, and there it will become rectified in the same way the neshama will come into another body together with the nefesh of a convert and a ruach as well. The concept of nefesh of the convert has already been mentioned, and it will be mentioned further several more times. A special supplementary section is included at the end of chapter 1, section 11, and note 10 there. We revealed that section in its location in chapter 11. And it would be good for you to review that section. Go back to chapter 1, section 11. It goes into great detail on the concept of a nefesh of the convert. It doesn't go into the discussion I've just had with you about is it also a stranger as opposed to a convert. The blemish ruchot and neshama, plurals of ruach and neshama, encounter the nefesh of the convert, which becomes the vehicle or interface for their entry into reincarnation. They merit through them because they achieve rectification through this arrangement. This entire section from the Saba, the section of the Zohar in Mishpatim that was translated and explained in note 10 to chapter 1. Having said this, we can answer an important question. The majority of people only merit their nefesh, and only a small amount of these later generations ever merit to their ruach and neshama. Yet we know that the Son of David will not come until all of the ruachs and all of the neshamot are rectified. The question of the rabbi is based on the famous statement of the Talmud. The Son of David will not come until all the neshamot have finished going out from the body. According to Rashi, the body is the name for the storehouse of the souls. The souls must go out from there to enter into physical bodies in this world in order to become rectified. The rabbi now relates that this teaching specifically to the soul levels of ruach and neshama. If the ruach and neshama do not come into physical bodies in these later generations, then how can they become rectified? Mashiach, the Son of David, would never be able to come, God forbid. Now we understand that the ruach and the neshama can reincarnate into other bodies on top of the nefesh of a convert, and they too become rectified. However, when the original nefesh eventually achieves rectification, it can receive a place of his own, the ruach of a righteous tzaddik, whose deeds were similar to his. This will be in place of his own ruach. The original nefesh is the one that could not become the vehicle for its ruach and neshama because the latter were blemished or damaged in the first reincarnation. When this nefesh becomes rectified in subsequent reincarnations, what happens to it? Its ruach and neshama have gone to the nefesh of a convert. Therefore, in place of its own ruach, he will receive the ruach of a tzaddik. Or, as I explain it, he will receive a ruach that is a stranger to him, to the nefesh. If his nefesh leaves this world before the original ruach has finished its tikkun, then the nefesh can, in the meantime, accompany the ruach of the righteous tzaddik to the world to come, or the world that is coming, and through it receive its fitting reward. Once it owns its own ruach completes its tikkun through its own reincarnation in another body, as we explained above, then the nefesh will say, I will return to my first husband, and it will reunite with its ruach. Likewise, once the neshama becomes rectified, the nefesh and the ruach will return to become one with it. I hope this is clear. In essence, what's being said here is that when the nefesh blemishes but corrects itself, and now a ruach comes and it corrects itself, and a neshama comes and it's not quite finished correcting itself, and an action is done that blemishes all three, they reincarnate into three separate bodies with a different relationship of the other parts of the soul. The nefesh has a stranger ruach. The ruach has a stranger nefesh. The neshama has a stranger of both sometimes. Okay. Now, at the time of the correction, The three parts are going to go to their first body. The concern is that we can never complete the correction because the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama are constantly being re-blemished. That is a potential risk. So how are we ever going to bring Mashiach? This is what's being explained in this section, that because these ruach and neshama can attach themselves to a righteous tzaddik who will come and act as their lower selves in order to allow them to achieve their correction. That's what's being described. Chapter 4, Section 6, The Righteous and the Wicked. I think I'm going to end up going over this section a second time next week, because we really don't have the time to finish the whole section. All three sections that are left. So we'll see. We will now explain the difference between a righteous person and an evil person. This will allow us to better understand the differences among the verses and the things that are discussed by our sages. Sometimes we see that a person only reincarnates three times, according to the esoteric meaning of the verse. Behold, God does all these things two or three times with a man. This is a verse from Job. There are also the esoteric meanings of the verses, for three sins of Israel, but for the fourth I will not return, a verse from the prophet Amos. And who visits the sins of the fathers on the children unto the third generation and unto the fourth generation? This is a verse that's part of the Ten Utterances. Yet it says in Sefer HaTikkunim that a righteous person reincarnates up to 1,000 generations, and there are other sources similar to this. Thus, the question is whether a soul reincarnates up to three times and no more, or whether it can reincarnate as many as 1,000 times, and maybe even more. The verse itself answers the question. The four generations refers to evil people. As it says, who visits the sins of the fathers to those who hate me? In contrast, to whom is he doing kindness for 1,000 generations? The same verse answers, to those who love me and keep my mitzvot. Those who hate God are the evil people to whom the four-generation limit on reincarnation applies. Those who love God are the righteous people to whom 1,000 generations of reincarnation applies. The explanation is as follows. When the nefesh of a person comes into the world for the first time and sins, becoming blemished and forcing it to reincarnate into another body to become rectified, this is the first incarnation. If it doesn't become rectified, then it returns a second time. If it is not rectified, then it returns in a third reincarnation. But from then onward, he will not be able to attain rectification by reincarnating again. It is then said about it that the nefesh will be cut off from his people completely. The verse in Genesis is the first of many times in the Torah that the penalty of excision, or the Hebrew word is karet, of the souls of the wicked is stipulated. However, this is only when a person failed to accomplish any rectification over the course of the first three Gilgulim. On the other hand, if at some point during those three reincarnations he began this process of tikkun, even a little, then he will not be cut off. He will not have a karet. It is even possible that he could return to achieve rectification over the course of 1,000 generations, if necessary. I hope it's clear. If not, we'll discuss it at the end of the class. In effect, the difference between the righteous and the wicked has been explained. The completely wicked will not be allowed to reincarnate more than three times. The righteous may reincarnate as many as 1,000 times in order to increase merit and achieve rectification. Hence, one who does not achieve any rectification at all is called evil. But one who rectifies even a little is called righteous. All his subsequent Gilgulim will complete the rectification process. To what are these words applicable? I believe that I heard from my teacher that all this is the only true regarding the Nefesh, since it is from the world of Asiya that is immersed in the Klipot. That is why Karet, excision, is only mentioned with respect to the Nefesh, because only it can be cut off from holiness and remain immersed in the Klipot. The verses that talk about excision always talk about the Nefesh being cut off. God forbid, the Ruach and Neshama are never mentioned in connection with Karet. However, the Klipot do not have such a strong hold over the Ruach and the Neshama, which are from Yetzirah and Bariah. Therefore, a person is able to rectify them without failure. Although there are those that accomplish Tikkun quickly, and there are those who do it over a longer period of time and after many reincarnations. How is karet excision possible? How is such a thing possible? We have already discussed the verse where it is written that God devises strategies in order that the banished ones should not be banished, that no nefesh should descend into the Klipot and be cut off there, never to be redeemed. However, this matter can be understood in the following way. The good that was accumulated during the three incarnations is dispersed among others. The evil that is now left isolated and alone is dissipated and destroyed. My commentary. Please realize how vocabulary changes. Evil is defined for a desire to receive for oneself alone, in some uses, and in this article it is defined as someone who does not make any rectification in three incarnations. It is really the same thing, since someone deep into the desire to receive for oneself alone cannot affect the rectification of any errors. What is meant by the good is dispersed among others. Does this mean that a mitzvah that someone does will be allocated to someone else? Where is the removal of bread of shame? Ultimately, we teach that every good thing someone does creates an effect of pleasure to the body, to the body part that produces that mitzvah, and every soul part as well. This is the reason for the resurrection, since the body follows the direction of the soul and does something good, that affects its pleasure. Mida keneged mida, measure for measure. There is this idea of the mitzvah is allocated to other bodies in order to eliminate the evil in the rest of the body. This is very rare and will be explained later in the book in more detail. And this also may, I haven't read it, I haven't heard it from a teacher, so take it with a grain of salt, but that may explain why in our generation we have body parts being shared with other bodies. Transplantation of a kidney or a liver or a heart. What is the purpose behind that? It could very well be that the good that particular heart did is being transferred to a body that will receive the nefesh, so that both the nefesh and the body can be in the same place, and at the resurrection of the dead, receive the same pleasure. Because elsewhere there is that kind of discussion that the body receives the pleasure and the soul receives its pleasure, and they need to receive the same aspect of the pleasure because they were present together in doing that. Does anybody have any questions? I'm going to cut the class a little short, but I'm hoping you're going to ask a lot of questions tonight. There's two more sections that are rather long and involved. The second one is really in a very unique, it's really an interesting section, and it is well worth studying together. But to study it without any preparation of this section 7, you're going to lose something. So I'm going to delay it, and I'll decide whether next week we're going to read section 6 as well, because it's all tied together in what section 8 teaches. Are there any questions?
Could I get you to email me the handout address, because I missed the first 15 minutes. I did follow you a little bit on Kabbalah Online, but mostly toward the end before I finally got to section 4, or chapter 4, okay. Section 6.
I understand. The address for tonight is http://azur.yeshem.com/Kabbalah-advanced-reincarnation-9.htm. There's no www. What there is this word Azure, A-Z-U-R-E. That is the name of the cloud. What the cloud very technical things, so I don't want to go into it because I don't understand it. That's why I have the technical people doing it. But we are transferring the location of the web, or the location of our website, from a server to a multiple list group of servers. So the speeds will improve, and it's supposed to be a better system. But then, after tomorrow, when we revisit the website, when all of the transformation takes place, the website address will return to www.yeshem.com, and then whatever particular page we're going to.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Please become aware that Thursday night at 10 p.m. is a Zohar class. And very importantly, Motzi Shabbat, Saturday night at 10 p.m., is Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. Rosh Chodesh is Saturday and Sunday. Rosh Chodesh Tammuz is a very important Rosh Chodesh because this is the month that people can fall to disease. This is the month when all you have to do to avoid disease, a particular horrendous disease called cancer, the name of the sign, the name of the disease is the same. There is a reason why Abraham named the month of Tammuz what he did, and the sign of the constellation what he did. The Hebrew word is sartan, which means crab, but it also means cancer. There is a reason for that relationship, because cancer starts in that month. And the way to avoid letting cancer grab hold of your body is to remain happy each and every day, each and every instant of every day during the month. And it's not easy to do, because the energy of the universe is a duality. The crab itself cannot walk straight forward. It has to walk one to the side, to the right, and then to the side, to the left. That's how it walks forward. Back and forth to the right and then to the left, and to the right and to the left. It cannot walk straight forward. It also applies to the astrological sign and the people who are born in that sign. The Indians have the term speaking with forked tongue to apply to this idea. It's important to learn about the month of Tammuz to avoid letting the disease grab hold of part of your body. Because once it grabs hold of part of your body, it's there and it's not going to let go easily. So the best solution is to remain happy during the month and not give it an opportunity to grab hold of your body, as like everything else in Kabbalah, it's simple to describe. It's not easy to implement. And we need the support of Rosh Chodesh to implement it in our lives. Please join us Saturday night. I cannot stress that enough. Any other questions? Sunday morning, the 10:30 class will be giving you the Kavanah, the intentions for the morning blessings that we seem to be spending so much time on Motzi Shabbat, or Saturday morning before the Torah reading. And Monday evening, well, let me start at Monday morning at 5 o'clock, 5 a.m., we'll be teaching the second Sefer Yetzirah class. And at 5:30 p.m., we will be teaching our basic class number one in the new city of Sacramento. We're starting the basic class again. And then at 8:30 next Monday, as I drive home, I will be giving this class on the four phases, the second class of the four phases. I will pull the car over and speak to you from the car. And then Tuesday, next Tuesday night, at again, we will start the class at 8:30 because my daughter has changed her schedule and I have the responsibility of putting my grandson to sleep around 8. So I'll be available at 8:30 to give this class. Any questions before I wish you all a beautiful evening? Have a beautiful evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.